The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Good morning. You're listening to WISO in Yellow Springs. I'm Vic McKeonis. We have the Book Nook coming up for you. And today, my guest will be Andy Martin. He had a very unusual thing that he had to do. He followed around Lee Child, the best-selling author. He spent a year watching Lee Child write a novel, one of his Jack Reacher novels. And the result is a book called With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. This is a very unusual project. If you're into Lee Child, you won't want to miss this interview coming up following NPR News. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McKeonis. I'd like to welcome to the program today Andy Martin. He joins us on the telephone in New Jersey. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Vic.
Andy, I am intrigued by you. I am just amazed that you had access to the writer Lee Child. How did this happen?
I'm a bit amazed myself that he put up with it, to be honest. I've been reading, funnily enough, the works of Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus, and you know how they knew one another, and you know Sartre had written this long essay about one of Camus' books, and I thought, well, you know, which is purely philosophical and speculative, and I thought, well, why didn't you just ask him? You know, you're in the same city, for goodness sakes, and you could just have popped round, had a drink, and yeah, what were you thinking when you did that? And then I thought, well, I can't do that because now they're both dead and gone. So I was trying to think of someone else, you know, to take the place of Sartre and Camus, and I just thought of Lee Child. And so he basically, you know, was my kind of guinea pig in this experiment, you know, to find out if the author was in fact still alive and kicking, and you know, could answer questions directly, and he turned out to be a kind of ideal subject for that inquiry.
But how did it happen? I mean, you don't just go, "Yeah, Lee." You call him up on the phone and go, "Yeah, Lee, let's hang out for a year while you write your book, and I'll just stare at you." Okay. I mean, how do you do that? How did you get access to him?
The way you put it, I did, of course, fully expect him to say, "No way, Jose, are you mad or what?" You know. I think that there were a couple of factors. One is that, for starters, he was at that point about to start his 20th book. So he'd already written 19 without anyone looking over his shoulder at what he was getting up to. And he, for starters, was wondering how he did it. He was asking himself those questions. Indeed, other people have been asking him those questions. So the fact that I then said to him, you know, can I come and have a look over your shoulder and see how you do it? Those things kind of coincided, but the reality is that before that I had I think our friendship started when I'd written a review of one of his books. I mean, I first came across one of his books somewhere on the West Coast when it was written purely by chance. I thought, ooh, this is a bit different. And then I was fortunate enough at a certain point, The Independent in London asked me if I'd review one of his books. I said, oh, okay, fine. I wrote this review. And then amazingly, and this, well, it's never happened to me before. Maybe it's happened to a few reviewers. I mean, normally if you write a review, you might expect to get someone being rather sort of shirty and irritable, and then they will get back to you if you've said something critical. In this case, I've written a book, a review of, I forget which novel, I think maybe it was The Enemy, I'm not quite sure now, but he got back to me. Lee, the author, replied to my review through his agent or something like that, and said, oh, that was a very nice review, and I particularly laughed at your line about such and such. And I thought, wow, that's amazing, you know, that, you know, super successful Wright had bothered to even reply. And I thought that was terribly nice, and we started up a bit of a correspondence. He is always very, as you can imagine from his writing, he's very economical in his correspondence, by the way. He tends to, you know, reply with one word or, you know, short sentences and so on. But nevertheless, we went on like that. And then I interviewed him once or twice, once in New York. And so I did know him in advance before I asked him this crucial question, do you think you could be, you know, free for a year while I, you know, stare at you, as you nicely put it. So there was a bit of prior history there, which probably helped. I mean, I hadn't completely alienated him by that point. So, and there were one or two, I mean, you know, a few other writers occurred to me, but so, for example, one I thought would be a complete non-starter was Donna Tartt. Love her work. Mm. Takes about 10 years to write the book. I mean, no one's going to stick around for 10 years. Well, mind you, that could be my next project. Maybe I should drop her a line, but 10 years? Whereas I knew that Lee was fairly efficient, that he gets through it one a year, and so there was a finite period of time involved, you know. A bit like, you know, doing a year at university, but it was like the University of Lee Child. See how it's done.
Well, you could have asked James Patterson, but, you know, 5 minutes later you would have been finished.
I know. Didn't he have about 16 or 17 books out last year? I think, you know, in 1 year or something.
Yeah.
But so that's more like watching, you know, cars being produced at the Ford factory, isn't
it? Right. It's like a factory for sure. In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Andy Martin, and I just finished his book, With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. And you have another book called Reacher Said Nothing, Lee Child and the Making of Make Me. And I assume that book came out before this one?
It did come out, but such are the intricacies and ironies of publishing that it's now coming out again in the spring.
Oh, okay.
In fact, in a new edition, yeah.
Now, I remember that book, but remind me, is the title related to the fact that in one of his books, and I'm guessing it was that one, Reacher kept saying, Reacher said nothing. Was that the book?
Yeah, that's right. I checked, you know, he's finished his 24th novel, and I actually ran the entirety of it through a concordance engine, and he has used that phrase, I think it was 405 times in the entirety of the work. So that is quite a recurrent catchphrase of his, Reacher said nothing, and it's ironic because, you know, of course, he's actually managed to write 24 novels with saying Reacher said nothing quite frequently. So somehow he's managed to get away with being quite productive. And indeed, it's over. I did check it out. I think it's something in excess of a couple of million words now, the totality of his oeuvre, but at the same time rather economical. So that strange combination.
Andy, we have a lot of listeners out there who know who Lee Child is, who are familiar with the series featuring Jack Reacher. I've had Lee on this program a number of times over the years. And then we have all the listeners out there who are going, who is Lee Child? Who is Jack Reacher? Tell them who we're talking about.
Okay. So Jack Reacher is the hero of the novels, the protagonist of the novels written by Lee Child. He's now written 24 of them. And he has also figured, people might have seen this, in a couple of movies as well, played by Tom Cruise. And there will be a TV series, which I think is going to be on Amazon, also starring Jack Reacher. So Jack Reacher, if he isn't already familiar to you, will become increasingly familiar, I think. And these novels come probably under the heading of thrillers, I think, actually. But I'm always kind of reluctant to pigeonhole them because I think thriller writers tend to get not exactly a bad press because they're super successful in many ways, but I think they tend to be underestimated as writers. So it was just myself trying to sort of revisit these works and just see them as texts, as works of art to some extent. And, you know, watch, you know, Michelangelo at work painting the ceiling, or in this case, Lee, you know, writing his sentences. I suppose he is very well known, perhaps, for the short sentence So a certain economy of style. And there's famous work by the great French critic Roland Barthes talking about the degree zero of writing, which is actually referring to Albert Camus, but I think Lee probably achieves that better than any other writer I can think of. And there was one funny incident which I can recall where I went to his apartment, doing my regular routine of observing and so on. He says, "Quick, come in. I've just written this great four-word sentence. Come and check it out." And he was very excited by his four-word sentence. Of course, had I been knocking on the door of Marcel Proust's apartment, he might have said, "Oh, come in, I've just finished writing this, 400-word sentence, which is really cool. Come and have a look at this." But Lee has specialized, in short, in the, in brevity, a certain brevity of style and directness, I guess, actually. But behind that seeming simplicity, there is a degree of complexity, which I hope I managed to sort of bring out in my a degree of dedication to the, I think he probably wouldn't use the word art very often, but he would certainly use craft. And so I suppose I was trying to sort of, get the hang of his craftsmanship in observing what he did.
You're listening to the Book Nook, and my guest is Andy Martin, and we're talking about Lee Child and Jack Reacher, and the whole world that Lee Child has created. And you've mentioned Camus a couple of times, who supposedly was killed by the KGB. You've mentioned Marcel Proust. I guess we need to tell our listeners about your day job. What's the deal with your day job?
Right. And you said, Camus bumped off by the KGB. That is a good theory. And I know there's a new book on that. Because, of course, he died very young, Camus, as your listeners will probably know. I think, 48 or 9 or something? But back in 1960 in a car crash. And, of course, one doesn't like to think that that was purely accidental. And one likes to think in a conspiratorial thriller-like way that he was done in by the bad guys. And maybe he was. Mm. But I think this is yet to be demonstrated. But, my day job, I do have an interest in these matters because I teach French at Cambridge, amongst other things. So that is how, I suppose I have a professional kind of commitment to some of those writers. But, I tend to see Lee as part of a grand continuum of, interesting writers over the years. But Lee himself is actually, in very many ways, a kind of an intellectual, almost a sort of professorial type, but he doesn't necessarily want readers to know that. But I think it was that kind of professorial. I mean, and also he's rather sympathetic to academics, which is why he let me through the door, I think. Oddly enough, he rather approves of them as sort of, interesting eccentrics, I think, actually. Mm. And but he has that kind of attention to detail and to the intricacies of language, which should endear him to academics as well, actually, I think. So that was part of his appeal to me. I mean, by the way, I think, and this it will be well known to those serious fans of Jack Reacher, Jack Reacher speaks French. I don't think Tom Cruise got round to doing that in the movies, actually. But the Jack Reacher's family, he is, of course, the son of an American Marine, I think. But his mother is French. And so he bestrides the continent and speaks fluent French. And so that kind of gets into the books a little bit. And so I think that, for me, being a French specialist, that kind of provided a bit of a bridge to some extent. And the irony of that, by the way, is that, and one of the things Lee complains about, and he is a kind of global bestseller, but he sells least, he maintains, in France. And he's always felt rather bitter about that because he goes, "Well, look, Jack Reacher has a French mother and you still don't want my books in France. It's an outrage." So such are the ironies,
Well, the French saw right through that ploy. My guest is Andy Martin. His book is With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. You're hearing about it on The Book Nook, and we'll continue with our program right after this. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, Building a More Informed Community with Independent News and Storytelling, and it's the Book Nook, and my guest today is Andy Martin, who just got off a plane in New Jersey or New York and has joined us on the telephone to talk about his book, With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. You just sat there and watched him, and for those of us who are hardcore fans of the series, we know that he has this weird habit of always starting the next book on the same date. He's kind of superstitious in a way, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, September the 1st. So when I got in touch with him, and I didn't know this before, actually. Fans were ahead of me, but I got in touch with him purely by chance. I had this, well, I thought it was a bright idea or a wild idea, sometime in August, in fact, late August. And when he got back to me, he actually said, well, I'm starting next Monday, so if you want to do this, you better get over here. And I was in Cambridge at that point, the UK Cambridge. And I think he probably said that thing, oh, well, there's no way this guy is going to go through with that. And then I think he got the shock of his life when I turned up and actually knocked on his door. And he goes, oh, well, oh, you're here. All right, we better do this then. So that's how that came about. But his superstition is to do with when he got started on the whole thing, because he, as people perhaps know, that he was in television before he started writing. In fact, started writing really, and this may be an inspiration for people who are in different professions thinking, I know, I'll give this thriller writing a bit of a go. He didn't start to the age of 40 when he got sacked, essentially, from Granada TV in England. And, you know, he'd had a good job, and then suddenly he was, oh, my God, I've got a kid and a mortgage and so on. What am I supposed to be doing? And he thought, I know, I'll give this writing block a go. And September the 1st was the day he went out to buy the paper to write on. Because the funny thing is, and you can still see this, it should be preserved somewhere, I believe, actually. In fact, at the moment, it's only preserved on his shelves. The pencil with which he wrote the first draft of Killing Floor, which is the first book in the Jack Reacher series. It's a wonderful book. But he wrote it, first of all, in pencil. And the reason for that is that admittedly, going back to, 1990, I think it was, it was sort of, yeah, you could still write it on you could certainly have written it on a typewriter or, a computer, word processor of some kind. But he actually said to himself, and you have to admire this, that, okay, so far I haven't earned a penny with the writing. I can't, afford, therefore, in a strictly financial way, to use anything that's expensive. So I'm going to go at the cheapest thing, a pencil and a sheet of paper, and write using that. And that's how he did the first draft, all in pencil. And you can still see that. And that, I think, the original draft is now preserved at University of East Anglia in England, in fact, actually, where it can be consulted. So that's how he got started. Bought the paper, and that's his big day. So he always refers back to that. So he's tried to stick with that. And because it worked the first time around in this superstitious way of his, he's thought, oh, well, don't change it. It's like if your team's winning, keep those socks on. And, so far it seems to have worked.
Andy, you just mentioned the words first draft. And I seem to recall reading in your book that he doesn't really do a first draft. He just does a draft and that's it.
Well, that is a very good point, and he came up with this great line. How did he put it now? Because it sounds like, the kind of thing that Jack Reacher would say if Jack Reacher was writing a novel. Because he started, and I said, so, something like, and so this is your first draft, right? And just because I had no idea really what he was doing. And he says, what was it now? This is not the first draft. This is the only draft.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, no one messes with my prose.
Right.
And I think he says that, he would allow the editor to make three suggestions only, of which he would only take one seriously.
Oh.
So that was his line. But And there was a degree of self-mythifying going on there because although that at that point, that was definitely the way he was working, the reality is, going back to the first one, he was much more tentative. So when he started writing that, he did it in the first, and the novel, as people know, is written in the first person, so it's written, as it were, in the voice of Jack Reacher. But he didn't know the Jack Reacher's name at that point when he started writing it. So you will see that for the first, you know, two or three chapters, when Jack Reacher is arrested in the first line of that book. But you know, for the first two or three chapters, he refuses to tell anyone his name, and that is because Lee did not know what his name was. Uh-huh. And it was only when, and people probably know this story because he went to a supermarket with his wife, and his wife, you know, assumed that his would-be writing career was going to be a disaster. And, you know, in the helpful way that spouses have, you know, very encouraging. And they went to the supermarket together, and he helped an old lady get this tin of soup off a high shelf because he's a very tall guy. He's well over 6 foot, rather like Jack Reacher, in fact, but much less muscular. But anyway, and so he helps him get this can of soup, helps the old lady with the can of soup. And then his wife says to him, well, you know, if this writing gig doesn't work out, you can always become a Reacher in a supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, hold on a second. That's good. I'm going with that. And he rushes back and gives his hero the name of Reacher, Jack Reacher, straight from that. And that, so such are those chance events, and that got set in stone. But when he started, no, he didn't know. And he didn't know what he was doing. So, yeah, the point being that really was a first draft, which did get changed around a lot. And people will know, and I won't give it away for anyone who hasn't read it, that there's a certain plot at what the bad guys are getting up to in this little town in Georgia. And by the way, Lee himself had not been to Georgia at that point and just made it up. He eventually went to Georgia and said, you know what, it's just like Killing Floor. So he thought he'd, you know, he got it just right. But the point is that the plot got changed around a lot, in fact. So what you see in the finished draft was the original plot was to do with drug running. So I can say that because that is not in the in the finished work at all. So that's what the bad guys were getting up to, and there was loads of money on the back of drug running. So it was a bit like, you know, Breaking Bad or something like this, but in Georgia. So that got changed, and several other things. So when he started out, I think you could reasonably say that he was much more tentative. And it only got, but he probably got, you know, into his stride really by the third or fourth novel and thought, okay, now I really know what I'm doing. And certainly by the 10th novel, he didn't sort of brook much interference. And so by the time of the 20th novel, when I finally interviewed him, yeah, he was definitely making those kind of growling Jack Reacher type noises about his prose and not having anyone else interfere with it, and the foreword sentence being great. And yeah, so he got kind of locked into a style and an attitude, I suppose, which worked well.
All right. On September 1st, he starts the book, even if he's writing just one sentence. But I think it'll be a big surprise to a lot of people when you read this book that he has no clue. He sits down, he has no clue what he's writing about. He just sits there and there's nothing there. He just kind of goes into it blind.
That is amazing, isn't it? And I think that was partly why it was sympathetic to me, because when I suggested this idea, I had no idea what I was doing, basically. And he thought, okay, that's a good approach. You know, don't plan.
Mm-hmm.
Just be spontaneous.
Mm.
I mean, I like to use this rather fancy word, aleatory. Or do you say aleatory over in the States? But anyway, just meaning just throw the dice and see where it lands. And that's how he works. And it works for him. It doesn't work for everyone. And I don't think he necessarily recommends it. But I do think he feels generally you can overthink these things. And it helps to, you know, kind of play fast and loose. I mean, people sometimes refer to this as a pantser type, as you're flying by the seat of your pants. And the metaphor that he uses is like jumping off a cliff at the start of a book and you hope you'll get a soft landing. But he approached it with this degree of kind of sublime confidence, which has stood him in good stead. So I do think that makes a bit of a difference. But it is surprising. I mean, it amazed me. And certainly when and a lot of people are skeptical about this and cannot believe that he, you know, creates what is in fact, you know, very complex architecture without having a blueprint beforehand, which he doesn't do. And I can reassure those people who are skeptical that, you know, when he started, he had a, and he just thought of the title the night before, Make Me. Didn't really know what it was supposed to mean exactly. He had a vision of what the bad guys were getting up to. He knew that it was supposed to start with the bad guys rather than Reacher. And using this backhoe, and there was a body. And he had a vision of that. Beyond that, he had nothing. And he hadn't really worked out. So that was September the 1st, as you rightly say. And he got down, you know, several hundred words about that on September the 1st. But then he hadn't worked out precisely what it was that was going on in this small town somewhere in the backwoods until, I think it was about middle of January or possibly the end of January. So several months down the road, it all became clear to him. I mean, I think there had been inklings perhaps, but it was only then that he said, okay, I think I really know what, because certainly, you know, around Christmas time, he had been going, I've got no idea. And, you know, maybe this will be a short story or something. I just can't work it out. And you've been struggling around. And some of that was no doubt slightly theatrical, perhaps for my benefit, you know, in a kind of Hamlet-like way, you know, wrestling with, you know, to be or not to be sorts of questions. But it took a lot for him to actually, and various things to come together for him to have, because I think most people writing a thriller would probably know in advance what the bad guys were supposed to be getting up to. But he really did not. And that is a technique that has served him well, one has to say.
I think Ian Rankin has kind of a similar approach. My guess is Andy Martin. His book is With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. The first time I interviewed Lee, he was out on book tour, and he just published his book Persuader, and he really hadn't broken out yet the way he has now. And
that was about the ninth book.
Something like it was 16 years ago. It would have been 2003. Yeah. And he came through. He was out on tour. He came out to see me, and we did a live interview. And since then, his books have just been.
Yeah, the
straight to the number one slot. Boom, boom, boom.
I think it was about then, actually, around that time.
He hit it.
Kind of turning point.
Right about then. And his current book, Blue Moon, went straight into the New York Times bestseller list. And you have a really funny thing in your book where you're going around with him, and he's got a new book coming out, and he's all nervous. He's freaking out. He doesn't think his book is going to go straight to number one. He's, like, losing it. It was bizarre to imagine him doing that.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? But that is real. He was actually genuinely nervous about the whole thing. He was tremendously relieved when it all worked out. So, I mean, he is like any other author, I suppose, and, you know, certainly complains about, you know, what was his line? What am I supposed to do about those 20% of readers on Amazon who are bitching about me all the time? And, you know, so even if you've got, you know, astronomical reader figures, still all the same kind of, you know, anxieties apply, just more so, I guess, actually, for someone like Lee. Yeah, I was very interested in that. I suppose that how I came to write the second book, The With Child, I was very interested in that relationship with the readers. I mean, what his sense of how important the readers are, and trying to sort of reach out and, you know, understand the readers and actually appreciate the readers. And for anyone who's been to one of you know, his book signings, I think they will agree that actually he does genuinely enjoy meeting people, even in those loads of people, you know, queuing up. He will actually have a bit of a chat with you and so on, and to try to, you know, understand who you are as well, actually. So that is cool. And also the phenomenon of why it is we have become, you know, he is hugely successful, but why it is so many people read his books. So that's why I was going around not only speaking to Lee, but also trying to, you know, as he does, you know, have a chat with his readers and find out who they are and, you know, what they do and what they get out of reading the works of Lee Child, and which have, you know, and they've various motives, of course. I mean, for example, one that springs to mind is the woman in South Africa where Jack Reacher basically replaced her husband. Mm-hmm. I should point out for, you know, people that the husband was, in fact, dead at that point.
Uh-huh. Right.
He had died suddenly, and she found that Jack Reacher was a perfectly acceptable substitute.
Yeah, that
in
was...
many ways more reliable, of course, actually, because, you know, he doesn't die on you, Jet Reacham.
Right.
So that was one.
Unless you kill him, right, Andy? Like at the end of the book when you suggest that you should kill him?
Oh, yeah. What, you mean kill that he should kill off Jack Reacher?
No, you're talking about killing Lee Child.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did talk about that a few times.
Mm-hmm. Admit it. Yeah.
I do, and it's not because I personally seek to bump off Lee Child, but for one thing, he lives just down the road from where John Lennon was shot. So I was conscious of that. And, you know, if you think of the Stephen King book, was it Misery, you know, about the mad fans, you know, who in that case, you know, lock up the poor writer and do terrible things. So the fan who will, you know, torment the author. So that perhaps was never entirely, you know, far from our minds. But
okay.
He is the one who, you know, suggests that kind of thing, because he is, I mean, there was, for example, one point where he was saying, we were standing at he lives in this nice barn overlooking Central Park, and he was looking at an 11th floor, and he had the window open because he was having a smoke, and for once he was letting the smoke go out the window, and he was saying, and, you know, Make Me at that point had just come out, and he was saying, you know what, the best thing I could do to promote Make Me would be to jump out of this window right now, because people love a posthumous story, and there'd be a really interesting feature on this, you know, why did the mystery author, you know, bump himself off and so on. And then he started speculating, okay, but they would assume that in fact it was Andy Martin who'd shoved him out the window.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So he was in fact inviting that kind of let it be said, it's
yes.
far from my mind to actually assassinate Lee Child. But it's interesting that he himself, you know, has considered that possibility for sure.
Well, Andy, we appreciate it that you did not succumb and take the bait.
I didn't. I resisted.
My guess.
In fact, it's probably just as well. He didn't have. In fact, and this is a terrible truth, which may well surprise many readers. He does not, in fact, have a gun in his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
He does have a few bullets, oddly enough, and he just split. Which is a strange conjunction, but I did start playing around with one of the bullets, and he did threaten me with one of the bullets at one point, but not actually having a gun. I wasn't too worried about that. But he prefers, you know, mano a mano to the gun, but he has been known to wield a gun over the ages. But And people may have speculated. In fact, there is one reader I quote in the book who is, in fact, a guy who lives in Montana, a guy called Sam Fussell, who taught me to shoot, in fact, who's very much a tough guy and former bodybuilder and so on. And he is the one man who thinks that Jack Reacher is, I mean, I quote, a lightweight, an urban sophisticate, who would not survive in the wilds of Montana for very long. And he has a good point there. But it strikes me that many people, I mean, with all the fantasies that we have about the fantasy figure of Jack Reacher, some women may contemplate, you know, what it's like to go to bed with Jack Reacher. Many guys, I think, fantasize about, well, what would it be like to get in a fight with Jack Reacher? And could I take him? But I think that would be very difficult. But, I mean, I often contemplated, certainly, what it would be like to get in a fight with Lee Child, and could I take him? And because, you know, the possibility of that happening has arisen once or twice, as you can imagine. And I actually have I've got a plan, should it actually arise. I mean, he laughs at this because he thinks he is mean enough and bad enough to, you know, to kind of, you know, completely overwhelm me. But in fact, I do have a secret plan for that when it comes to the crunch, which, you know, on application, I am prepared to reveal to other readers should they get into a fight with Lee. I probably shouldn't reveal it publicly right now, because it will put him at a disadvantage. But, you know, it's available on application.
Okay. Well, I do recall that this character who thought that Reacher was a wimp also used elk urine as cologne, so we really don't need to respect his opinion. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Andy Martin, and we're talking about his book With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher, and we'll continue our conversation right after this. The Book Nook continues on WYSO. I've been joined by Andy Martin. He's on the telephone in New Jersey, and we're talking about his book, With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. I think it's pretty much out in the open. Janet Maslin wrote about Lee moving out to Wyoming recently, and she pretty much publicly reveals in there that he's been a pothead for about 50 years. This came as a bit of a surprise, I think, to some people.
Yes, perhaps. And he had given an interview earlier in that august journal, High Times, in fact, actually. So he is, in fact, quite evangelical about pot smoking. I remember he had some line about, what was it? That marijuana shouldn't be legalized. It should be made compulsory. And so he is quite a proponent of smoking. And certainly when it comes to his own work, I mean, he finds that, I mean, I've stressed that he likes not to overthink things. And every now and then, he doesn't exactly get writer's block, but, you know, if he's wondering, well, should I go this way or that way and so on, he will often resort to having a pipe, in fact, actually, is his preferred mode, to loosen up his thinking, actually, so to disengage the neocortex in some way and try to, you know, release the unconscious in some sense. And that, again, it works for him, but it's a bit like starting on September the 1st. Because he thinks it's going to work, it works. He associates smoking with creativity. He's also a great tobacco smoker, of course. People are probably conscious of that, gets through a packet of Camels a day. And again, that works for him. I don't think that should be made compulsory either, but it's certainly part of his routine, not to mention 20/30 cups of coffee a day. So he says his two main food groups are caffeine and nicotine, but yeah, add on to that marijuana for sure. And there he is in Wyoming, as you say. I mean, that's more of a shock to me, actually, that he moved out to Wyoming from, well, you know, half the time. I mean, he is in Manhattan, the other half, I believe. But I think he spends, you know, more time out there in search of, you know, solitude and the great outdoors, I think, actually.
His wife was tired of Manhattan, is my understanding.
Well, yes, it's funny, the thing about his wife, because, I haven't seen her recently, but wonderful woman. But she has always been tired of Manhattan, I think, and in fact spent many years in England, and said that she preferred living in England to living in America, whereas Lee, on the other hand, prefers living in America to living in England. But I think they meet up from time to time, nevertheless, actually. In fact, she, I recall, not sure this gets into the book, so this is an added bonus, in fact, actually. When I bumped into her one day, and she had arrived at the apartment, and she actually said to me, within about, I'd say about 10 seconds of me meeting her, she said, do you want to know the secret to a happy marriage? And, of course, politely, as one might well reply in those things, I said, yes, of course, I would very much like to know that. And her answer was, live on separate continents. But she was probably joking.
I'm sure.
But,
Well,
so that's their solution. That's, yeah.
I love that. That wasn't in the book. My guest is Andy Martin. We're talking about Lee Child. The thing that strikes me about him is he's such a hard worker. He is so methodical, and he does the work. I know I was kind of tweaking James Patterson earlier, but Patterson's like that too. He does the work. You go to the big book expo conference.
Yep.
There he is signing books. I've run into Lee a couple times at book expo. He's always by himself. He's walking around, but he's doing it. He's doing his job. Mm. And the last couple of years, he keeps putting these books out. I had him on for Night School on the show in 2016. Yeah. I had him back on for The Midnight Line in 2017. He doesn't have to do interviews with me, and yet he did. He did these interviews. I'm not helping him sell any more books. Mm. This guy does the work. And I noticed early on in your book, you mentioned the name of his American publicist at Random House. You just refer to her as Sharon. I know Sharon. I've booked my interviews with Lee through Sharon, And I noticed you didn't put her in your acknowledgments. Is there any reason why you didn't thank Sharon?
Probably pure neglect on,
okay,
my part,
I was just checking.
there are complexities there, no doubt, but she has done a brilliant job for
him.
And you're right to put the emphasis on sheer hard work, actually. I mean, for all the fun of writing, and particularly writing successful books, I think, you know, there is this kind of strong Puritan work ethic, certainly running through Lee, and you know, as there has to be in any writer, to get, you know, to the end of the road, to finish the book, rather than, you know, sit there twiddling your thumbs and worrying about the next adjective and so on. At a certain point, you have got to, and I'm going to try to avoid those verbs like churn it out and so on, which I think, you know, are overly associated with thriller writers. But you do have to, you know, complete the job. And I think the inspiration for Lee was not so much other writers. It was partly television, where he was very much involved with programming and scheduling and you know, even commercial breaks and so on, so that you knew that there had to be, and you had to get everything at the right time and so on. And you knew that something was coming along next. And so, that, you know, he was relying on everyone else to do the job. And so I think he's applied that same routine to himself. But the other thing is, he was brought up, you know, before he came to live over in the States, he was born in Coventry in England, but he was brought up in Birmingham, which is very, you know, the second city in Britain, but very much an industrial city. And he says he was inspired, and which I fully believe, by, you know, not so much, you know, factories, which perhaps, you know, Patterson has perhaps been inspired by in many ways, and bring many people to work simultaneously, but by these individual artisans, you know, craftsmen, particularly in metal, that, you know, traditionally in England, you'd find, you know, working under the railway arches in these little workshops, but he would produce great work, and he would go past them on, you know, on the way to school as a kid, and to some extent, you know, use their services later on. And I think he always felt that, you know, doing a good job of a piece of work was, you know, the best thing you could do. So he I think he never saw himself, and perhaps to some extent this could be a bit disabling, if you know, sit down and think, okay, I've got to be like William Shakespeare now, I've got to be up there with, you know, Homer, or, you know, or Marcel Proust, as the case may be. I think he never saw himself in those terms. I think he was thinking, okay, I've got to be able to produce a decent, you know, like, you know, a decent screw or some nuts, or, you know, this metal sheeting and so on. It's got to be as good as that can be. And so he applied that kind of fairly practical perspective, I think, to producing a book. And, yeah, and that's why, by the same token, you will find him, you know, doing the marketing and doing the promotion as well. Everything that needs to be done, he'll do it.
The work ethic is there. My guest is Andy Martin. And I think anybody who is into Lee Child and wants to know more about the man behind the Jack Reacher series will be intrigued by this book, With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. And it's scholarly, yet it's very accessible. And I was tickled when I read it, because you mention a lot of names. And you mentioned three names in here of people who I have had on the program, and they are all the most unrelated, bizarrely unconnected three people you could possibly name. Two of them are now dead. You mentioned Pierre Lemaitre.
Oh, yeah.
Who I had on the show, and we did an interview in French.
Did you?
Yes. Harold Bloom, who's been on the program twice, the late Harold Bloom, who just died.
Love Harold.
And Andrea Dworkin.
Right.
All three of them have been on this program, and you mentioned them. I'm like, this is bizarre.
That is a bizarre conjunction, I must say. And I'd forgotten about Andrea Dworkin, but yeah, now you remind me. But the funny thing, Harold Bloom is actually, there's a big connection with Harold Bloom, because, in fact, Lee is a great fan of Harold's, partly because of his book on Shakespeare, in fact, actually, which Lee rated highly. And so I was able to I was able to take one of – I was sort of intermediary between Bloom, of course, one of your greatest critics, as you say, recently deceased, And Lee, you know, one of the most popular writers that you'd least expect. I was a bit of a sort of go-between between them, passing books right and left, actually. So that was fun.
But you knew Harold?
Yeah. I got to know him quite well. And I was really, really sorry when he died, because he was the last guy left on the planet, as far as I know, who was capable of calling me a young rascal. So, yeah. I'm really going to miss that.
Oh, my. Well, yeah, he was something else.
Yeah, he was extraordinary. And so it's interesting. You had him on your show as well a couple of times. Mm. I mean, he could speak so well about just about everything. But what were you interviewing about Shakespeare in particular?
We had him on for the Shakespeare book, and also for his book of poems for children.
Really, right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, of course. Yeah.
And he recited all kinds of poetry from memory. The guy was just phenomenal.
Oh, he was actually phenomenal. And I know we're digressing like mad here, but there was one reason he looked up to me, which is that and only one I can recall, which is that I already knew the woman that he had been secretly in love with for many a long year, because she had once played the part of Cleopatra in London. And oddly enough, he, although it was a different generation, he and I had been at the same play, and I got to meet Cleopatra, and he had been fantasizing. And so, odd enough, there again, I was a bit of a go-between. I put him in touch with her and before he died, and he said, "I know I will never meet her, but she has been the love of my life." Of course, he has a lovely wife as well, actually, an actual wife, now widow, of course, Mrs. Bloom, Jeanne Bloom. So that was his sort of, you know, his Shakespearean lover, so to speak, an actual Cleopatra. But yeah, so that is funny. I tell you, the figure that comes back to mind in my book, when I think, I don't know if this struck you, was Lydia Lair, because Lydia mm-hmm. Lair, readers may know, is a character in Make Me. But she also exists and lives in San Antonio. And I went to meet her, because she had, in fact, paid a certain amount of money to charity. People are probably conscious of how this works now. To have her name glued to a character in one of Lee's books, and one, you know, paid some wonderful, I think it was a heart charity.
Let me correct you. She bid all that money to have dinner with him, not to get her name in the book.
There was an ambiguity about that. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Most people thought it was to have a name, and that was Lee's understanding. But she maintains, yeah, it was to meet Lee, as you know, a lot of readers want to do, and have lunch with him in New York and so on. And that was part of the deal. So, but ultimately, she was amazed to find herself in the book. It's true. And but the extraordinary thing that I don't know if you'll agree with this, Vic, but I found it was almost mystical the way that Lee had managed to, without knowing her at all and having done no research, because he disdains research, mm-hmm. actually, by and large, and knew absolutely nothing about her apart from the two words Lydia and Lair. In fact, he had somehow managed to recreate a life for her, which she had somehow lost, involving a guy who had died and at the age of 20 and so on. And she had been, it was like all this life that she might once have had was resurrected for her by Lee, even though he knew nothing of her. So she was actually blown away by this, as was I. And even Lee was a bit amazed and used the word spooky about how, but, and so what, you know, one wonders that, you know, the secret to being a best-selling writer is actually to have some kind of, you know, be able to identify, to reach out, or to tune into, you know, the collective unconscious, I suppose Jung would call it, or in this case, you know, the lives of others. I mean, that, I suspect, is the key to, and I think, it's partly why I ended up writing about readers, that Lee says the key to being a good writer is not to think of yourself as a writer, but to think of yourself as a reader. Mm. And so that ability to identify with what readers want and their lives seems to me the crux of it. And I suspect that many writers, you know, thinking of the sort of, you know, the Proust-type model, oh, well, it's all about me, it's about my life and so on. No, it isn't really. It's about other lives.
I agree. That's all very freaky coincidence there. Andy, we really appreciate your time today.
Vic, it's been a huge pleasure. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Andy Martin. His book is With Child, Lee Child and the Readers of Jack Reacher. You heard about it on the Book Nook for the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis.